Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to another Roguecast. I got no fancy intros this week.
It is the year, the week, the day of Crystar, the Crystal Warrior.
It is that. Good point.
I don't know if people know who Crystar is.
I'm pretty sure they don't.
But, you know, somebody out there does.
Tell them the truth, Brother Dave.
I would like Hasbro to announce how many Crystar figures they actually sold.
Hey, look, there's just a certain number of those boxes have to go out.
Well,
other retailers bought them, but are they just sitting on the shelves?
They got Build-A-Box. You got a Build-A-Figure thing in there.
Can you imagine a child walking down an aisle and being like, what is this crystalline figure?
No, but...
is that child Davey?
Aren't they mostly, like, adults anyway behind these?
And yeah, I mean, that's true.
The market
well,
on them?
Well, Nick, we know they sold one.
They did.
That's right. Okay, so I bought the Marvel Legend, which I don't collect action figures, really. I bought a random kind of nostalgia weird figure from my childhood. Because back in the 80s, when Marvel had all the licensed stuff, and was a lot of it was good, so like G.I. Joe, Micronauts, ROM, all good stuff. One of the ones that didn't happen, it's one of the ones that actually, what's the line from Pulp Fiction? It's one of the ones that didn't.
Oh, that's one of the ones that didn't, yeah.
Yeah, that's all it is. Yep. It was one of the ones that didn't. Crystar was a line of action figures set on like this crystalline planet. It was sort of fantasy themed. Crystar was the prince of, I think, you know, the rightful prince, and I'm pretty sure an evil guy was vying for control. The good guys were crystalline-looking people in it. The bad guys were lava men. Like Moltar.
Sure.
The big bad.
If you told me this was an 80s cartoon, but a la, like, you know, Silverhawks or
Thundercats. Like that. Where it would have, like, a better animated opening than the animation inside it. There was somebody
this was
like,
holy Marvel, right? It wasn't
it was a
like
very
a licensed
cool guy
property?
who was like a green crystalline dude who had like an eye patch and like a crossbow, and he was like, God, what was his name? Like
Crossbower.
It was something like that. Brave bow.
I like that.
Anyway. Clearly there's some sort of zeitgeist going on, though, maybe with all of the other Marvel sort of retro reprints and stuff. But weirdly, sadly, the way that Crystar is returning to the comics is Rob Liefeld is including him in some miniseries he's doing.
Yep.
So I'm probably about the same age as Rob Liefeld. Yeah, sadly, I think that's right.
And so Rob Liefeld is a fan of Crystar?
Yeah, I guess so. Or he thought it was ironic. I don't know. Hey, Rob.
Dave, you know, this is like everyone's nightmare. This is like announcing that they're finally doing a D-Man 5-issue limited series and Rob Liefeld's writing and drawing.
Yep.
My condolences to you in the start.
I think you said this is the monkey's paw.
Yes.
There's the twist.
Crystar's back, but Liefeld's doing it.
Incidentally, just to tell you exactly what the era was, it was clearly connected to the Marvel Universe, his strange fantasy world. Because in like issue 5, Nightcrawler shows up, and it only made 11 issues, and in issue 11 it had Alpha Flight, which were, I think, had then just gotten their own series. Mm-hmm. So, or very early 80s.
If you're trying to boost sales with Alpha Flight, you're already in trouble.
At the time, they were hot. People loved Canadians for a span of approximately 5 months. Anyway, so it's Crystar week. If you're up at the store, you'll see my Crystar figure floating around. Maybe we can get him in Nick's big fantasy throwdown.
All right, we got some comics. We got some games in this week. I'm going to remind you again, Summer Reading Challenge, if you have kids or teens, that is going on.
We've already had a lot of good returns.
The Albert coins have been claimed, so now you're just getting prize packs, but the prize packs are cool.
Yep. And the kids who are doing it seem to be really just having
you get the joy
time.
Of reading. That's really the point.
Right. I think every study ever shows that nobody reads anymore. But that's not true. There's some people who do read.
Some people do read.
And these are the kind of fun things we want to do to sort of promote it. And very much in that tradition of the old Pizza Hut reading challenge or schools that do it, things like that. So
I heard that if you don't read, you may grow up to be a Rob Liefeld worshiping Crystar lover.
My God.
Yeah, and nobody wants that. You can like Crystar And it, or you can like Rob Liefeld, but if you like both, you're a monster.
We knew he was probably going to be a bad seed when we found these Crystar comics under his bed.
Who gave these to you, Johnny? Moltar gave them to me, okay? It was Moltar. I don't know what happened there. I blacked out. What happened?
You prophesied, Randy. You had a prophecy.
We got the new Marvel Champions Iceman. They've slowed down production on these a little bit, but there is a new Iceman pack, which comes with Pyro as his villain, which kind of makes sense a little bit.
A little bit.
I mean, yeah, they are not traditionally enemies, but one shoots out ice and one shoots out fire.
I mean, they can try to make Iceman an Omega-level mutant all they want, but I don't believe that dude has an archenemy.
I hate to diverge a little bit, but I had to look it up. His name is Warbo.
Warbo. He was the cool guy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He was the Panthro of them.
He was the Panthro of them. Yes, that's the exact analog.
We got these new class action stickers from Foambrain. By class action is like a fighter's action is to action surge, and an artificer is like craft. And so,
these are not simple.
Not the class action movie class that action. John Travolta did.
Nor a class action lawsuit.
Right.
Which is that one.
So these are D&D classes. Yep. Affixed with some special thing that they do.
Yep.
Got it. They're very good with all these stickers. Yeah, and
they are. There's also a sheet. You can buy a sheet for like $5 that has all small versions of all of them.
Yep.
Just buy the sheet, you cheapskate.
No, buy each individual one for more expensive.
Oh, you do what you want, cool person.
We got Dizzy Lorcana's third series. We're already out of starters and all the other stuff, but we do have boosters still.
We do still.
This is Ursula's Return.
Yep.
I have not looked into the story of any of these yet, but they seem cool.
Yeah. Ursula died of a ship's prow, like, jammed into her. And
she's a giant ox, but she can come back.
Yeah, Wolverine's taken worse hits than that, and he's come back.
I want, like, the card of her return to show her, like, that ship's still impaled, and she's, like, dragging it. She's that giant-sized
She's also
kaiju.
Magic-based. She can...
Ursula.
You want a red band style?
Yes. Just like Marvel's Blood Hunt.
Yes.
Go ahead and give me the gaping, bloodied wound of Ursula.
Now she uses that as her weapon.
Yeah, she should. She should bust out the ship's prow and stab everybody who once wronged her. Hey, Prince Eric.
Yep.
Stabby, stab, stab, stab.
He got shanked by a big old octopus.
I think that might be a little more violent than
the secondary stab was actually superfluous, and it turns out single stab from a ship's prow to a human.
Exploded into a gut of blood. Red band, Ursula's Return. We got G.I. Joe Battle for the Arctic Circle. This is repurposing the X and Allies rules, sort of a classic. Yeah. Into a G.I. Joe Cobra versus G.I. Joe in the Arctic
Circle.
But
it's just in one area. It's not a global thing. Right. It's just
but
in
there's,
the Arctic
there's
Circle.
Tons of, like, you get little snow cat figures and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
I believe
very
it's
cool
the
looking.
Battle Bear, the snow cat, the...
You know, people don't know G.I. Joe. It sounds like they have animals. But these are, in fact, vehicles that just have cool names, y'all.
There's no animal named Battle Bear.
There might be an Battle Bear.
Well, no, but you can believe that G.I. Joe, like, as a toy of the 80s,
has
Battle Cat was a thing. So why wouldn't Battle Bear be a thing, Nick? Answer me that.
And the Joes have what? Sky Strikers and...
Yep.
It looks cool. I mean, if you're a Joe fan, this is going to hit your nostalgia button.
Yep.
It hit Randy's because
I
know he bought it.
I picked it up. I also picked up, finally, the G.I. Joe Deck Builder had an expansion called Silent Interlude.
Well, this I understand because it comes with a great, cool...
It comes with a
bonus.
Dice tower that is Destro's...
Tower
from that issue. But also, the Silent Interlude...
The single most famous probably issue of G.I. Joe, by the way.
This introduces a solo mode where you play Snake Eyes facing off with ninjas.
Yep.
And then there's a multi-cooperative add-on as well. So
it's pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
This is very neat.
We got a game called Skyrise. Don't know a lot about it. I just know it's been getting good reviews. The My Little Pony deck building game got a new expansion called Scholarly Shenanigans. We got a reprint of Risk 2210 that's been out of print for a long time.
I haven't seen that. I did not actually see that returned, but that's cool.
It features nukes and moon bases.
Yeah.
And all kinds of stuff. And then we got a restock of White Castle. A game I've talked about before that is not about hamburgers, but it is about like Japanese feudal times, and is a dice-based game, and is super
Harold
fun.
And Kumar go to Japanese feudal times?
Yes.
Is that what I'm getting?
It'd be cooler if it was about burgers.
What
is? I don't know.
All right, let's talk about comics for the week. It's not a huge week, but I actually was very pleased with a lot of what I read.
There's a lot of good stuff.
So let's start with, as always, the Energon Universe.
yeah.
And the finale of Cobra Commander. This wraps up the second wave of miniseries.
It's a great finale.
It's a great finale. It's going to lead right into Destro.
And I don't think this is a big, you know, this isn't giving anything away, but you Destro fans out there, you're going to get some Destro in this, too.
Oh, yeah.
There's a reason why it's leading in. But there's actually a lot of cool stuff in this. There's fun stuff set up.
I think it's... I like how they're kind of setting up Cobra.
Yeah.
It's not the typical... Yeah. Kind of set up for it.
Well, we never saw their foundation. Like, they were just there when G.I. Joe opened.
Yeah.
We've never seen their founding explored like this.
Well, the old comic Larry Hama stuff did show it.
Well, eventually he showed, like, how he did it, but he didn't start that way. This is building ground up.
Yep. You get to be there to see how it happens, why it's, you know, what's different about the Energon universe version of it. You know, they've got this power surging around there. Cobra Commander's been tracking it through the Dreadnought swamps and stuff like that.
Their Cobra Commander is very different from the traditional Cobra Commander that we have seen in the past.
But there's elements of that to him. He is still... There's a certain weaseliness to him. And he's...
The brains to back it up.
He's got the brains to back it up. He's also, like... He's pretty brave, actually. Almost foolhardy.
And very like Starscream in the Transformers book, he's... Ruthless.
He's ruthless, yeah.
Yeah.
But between the two of them, I would say Cobra Commander has much better leadership potential than Maniac Starscream, who's basically 100%. Joe Pesci.
Right.
Yes.
This guy actually seems like he can get shit done.
Well, if anyone's read Transformers, they know where Joe Pesci ends up.
Yes, that's true. Not wildly dissimilar to his promotion to becoming a made man in Goodfellas.
That's true.
But yes, this Cobra Commander is a guy who you can see why people would rally behind, even though he is also like kind of almost ridiculously ruthless in a few occasions in here. But it's good stuff.
We also got the second issue of Blood Hunt, which we've all been enjoying so far.
That is Marvel's Vampire Summer crossover thing.
Yep.
Dave has a theory about the Big Bad, which I don't... Can we say who the Big Bad is?
It's revealed at the end of the first issue.
Okay.
It's out there.
Okay. It's Blade. Blade's the big bad. But Dave has a theory. We'll talk about who it is, but we just want to put it out there when this is revealed. I believe Dave is 100% correct.
I think, it's 100%
It seems like all the hints match up, unless those are somehow red herrings and there's a reveal within
But we know McKay likes the Marvel Universe, and he likes
the these red herrings would be for such a weird subset of people. You're misleading like 10 people, three of whom are in this room.
Right. Yes. So, yes, we're pretty sure that there's Blade, but there's Blade may not be completely in control of his faculties. It may be someone else.
But his daughter Bloodline is very important to this, and she is teamed up with Dracula, and they show up in here.
Some great art of her. She's like kicking some ass in this one.
It's pretty great. And the Avengers get some revenge for the beatdown they took in the first issue.
Yep. Although there's also some Avengers that are still like the captives of them in it. Poor Thor, who has like a spike through his head.
Yep.
He got messed up.
He did. And then there's a big reveal at the end. Just like apparently there's a big reveal at the end of every issue.
Yeah, that's fun. Good horror cliffhanger stuff. There's a tie-in.
There is also a tie-in. There's also the Bloody Edition. We didn't read it this week.
No.
We're not going to unbag a new version every week. But the Bloody Edition will have some different stuff.
Somebody who gets the Bloody Edition, please pop it open so we can see the gore.
Then we got Union Jack the Ripper. Union Jack is a unpowered guy from England, right?
I don't know. That's changed.
Did they power him up or something?
They change that every once in a while, but yeah.
Because usually he's just a guy in costume. He's got a knife and a pistol, and that's his thing.
He's like a masked adventurer of the same school as like a Nightwing or something like that.
And he was a World War II and World War I hero.
Well, Falsworth was like part of the Howling Commandos.
Yeah, and then his working class buddy Joy Chapman stepped up. And somehow he's still alive and young. I don't know how this all works. Who knows?
Some Infinity Formula stuff?
But I don't know.
Sure.
But at any rate, now he's fighting vampires. Apparently he had some kind of like grim story thing happen to him. And now he's like a disgruntled
I remember
hero.
Back when Brubaker was writing, he was with like Spitfire, like together with Spitfire.
Okay. Well, in this one, he's like a disgruntled hero. He runs across this policewoman and this group of people she's trying to shepherd through a vampire-infested London. And it reads like a sort of a zombie apocalypse kind of thing. They're surrounded by evil. They're just trying to stay alive. and this one guy maybe is having a lot of psychological issues. It was just an interesting issue. I liked this quite a bit.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Even not knowing what like status quo is, Union Jack right now didn't really matter.
Bloodhunt has continued, and its site and its crossroads is continuing to have pretty good,
yeah, I'm digging it. We get the start of the finale of Nightwing, the final arc, five-issue arc by Tom Taylor. Bruno Redondo returns on art.
Yep, after a pretty storied run.
I like this. He's clearly going to face off with Heartless, the villain that he set up as his main villain. I think I'm ready for Tom Taylor to be done, but I'm not. I think Nick has sort of soured on this run a little bit. I definitely haven't soured on the run. I'm actually still really enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it wraps.
I'll give it a read later on this week and be the deciding vote.
All right.
If for some reason I don't like it, though, we're gonna have to destroy all copies.
I mean that's fair. That's fair.
It's just like that's the vote.
And then we've got Spider-Gwen the Ghost Spider, which is a new first issue for Spider-Gwen.
I thought this was a really good first issue.
She's had a bunch of first issues, which is kind of unfortunate because I think people just kind of skip it. But this is actually a new status quo. She is moving to 616 permanently, or supposedly.
With the help of an interesting...
The premise for why she's here and why she's doing this is interesting. And I like the art. I like their villain, their Spider-Man villain who guest stars. I'm curious to learn what the status quo is going to be.
Yeah.
It's a good first issue. Basically she's supposed to be hiding out, not really in much contact with the other spider people. And we'll see how long that lasts.
She knows like 8 or 9 of the spider people.
Right. Yep. There's a bunch of Spider-Man this week. In addition to, we got our late arrival of Spider-Man Shadows of the Green Goblin number 2. Which has a really fun moment between Spidey and Sandman. This is early Spider-Man, written by Jan DeMatteis. Really liking that series. We got the latest issue of Superior Spider-Man, and we got the latest issue of Spectacular Spider-Man.
Yep. That has a cool stinger in it. I enjoy character reveal.
From Dark Horse, we have a book called The Butcher's Boy. This is a... They call it a sort of Midsommar meets Evil Dead. Which is actually not a bad pitch. It's basically...
Yeah. I think that's its tone. I don't know what the exact story is.
620-somethings go to this, like, haunted ghost town. It's a town. It's, like, a small town. And they're having problems. One of them dated the other person, and he's really upset that she's dating somebody else. One of them has a really annoying new girlfriend who's, like, the one who organized this whole trip. And the other's like a brother and sister who they like had a family death, and it's like around this anniversary.
There's the Midsommar part.
There's all some stuff going on. And they hear this urban legend, this butcher who massacred and ate the town a long time ago, and they're talking about for ages. He's like an immortal boogeyman type.
Okay.
And they're dealing with that. The opening pages sort of promise stuff happened to them and weird Cthulhu-esque type stuff kind of. It's an interesting. The character stuff is really good. The setup is interesting. I'm curious to see where they go with it. If you like sort of that horror thing, I think Midsommar or Evil Dead, you might want to give this one a look.
Yep.
Blood Squad 7. This is Joe Casey's new Image book. That is the premise of this is basically Youngblood like 30 years later, but they can't use Youngblood because Rob Liefeld's dumb. And sold Youngblood to some film guy 20 years ago.
Yeah. We weren't quite aware of this, or we had forgotten it.
Didn't know.
Collectively, but it kind of gets mentioned in Joe Casey's afterward, and we looked it up, and we're like, oh, yep, sure enough.
Yep.
I guess Youngblood can't really be used right now unless some guy named... What's his name? Like, Rev Harland or something?
Yeah,
like
it's that. It sounds like a made-up name.
It's a ridiculous 90s name.
This is sort of like... He says basically it's 30 years later, all the kids of these 90s superheroes have grown up. There's a little bit of that, they're like authority over-the-top thing, but also like they're militarized superheroes, but also that celebrity superhero thing. It's an interesting extrapolation of the Youngblood concept. It's a little weaker for not actually being Youngblood, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah.
But he's doing the best he can with it, and it's interesting.
What I needed to see was Bad Rock at age 48.
Yes.
I need to see Shaft and Die Hard.
those were the names. Those are names. Those are certainly names.
He saw the Shaft, he died hard.
What was the... There was the little guy. What was his name?
Oh, Puck? Puck. Troll.
Or was Troll.
It was Troll.
It was Troll. He was a little dwarf. He was a little Puck man.
Yeah. Yep. It is as if Rob Liefeld had read some Marvel comics.
Yep.
Yes. And seen some movies.
Yeah.
Then we got White Boat, a new book from Distillery. This is by Scott Snyder and Francesco Francavilla.
This is my favorite thing this week.
Yeah,
this is one of my... It's high up on my list, and it's my favorite thing Distillery's done so far. It is a really interesting... It's a guy who... He lost his brother to a aquatic accident early on.
Yeah, like a rogue wave.
And now he's kind of a layabout, and he gets this chance. He's doing like journalism, nautical journalism of all things,
right.
Like writing about yachts.
Which
is kind
of like, yeah. And there is like one, like the an ultimate sort of pricey mega yacht
called the White Boat.
And when he is taken aboard it. He finds that there's like some sort of sinister, perhaps some maybe creepy things, maybe cultish things.
Yeah.
Scott Snyder writes the hell out of it.
Yep.
He lets the art from Francesco Francavilla breathe, though.
Yep.
I feel like he gave room for him to do his stuff.
Yep.
And this is, I think, going to be a 3-issue miniseries. I have to say, for like a first issue, it delivers.
There's a lot of good stuff in this.
Yeah.
I thought as I was reading this might be a one-shot. I'm like, oh, this is very satisfying
as a
read.
Yeah, a lot of stuff happens in that first issue, and there's kind of cool reveals. It reminded me in a way of like, you know, how Jeff Lemire was moving to that... He was doing some original graphic novels at some point.
Yeah.
And like the first one he did, which was that creepy lighthouse thing, should have been so up my alley, but it felt kind of anemic story-wise. And I was like... This is actually kind of more like what it should have been as far as how much you should have gotten out of it.
Agreed.
So it's a rare case. I'm usually more Lemire than Snyder, but I feel like Snyder came through on this
one. Yeah, he really did.
Good job, Snyder. Good job, Snidey.
And then, Nick, I guess we also... There's an Energon book, Void Rivals, this week.
That has a notable Transformer in it.
Yep. It's on the cover. Let's say who it is.
Springer,
yes. One of the rare triple changers.
Oh, I forgot
the Autobots.
And who was... If you've seen... Saw him on the cartoons, like the...
Well, he was introduced in the movie.
The Transformers movie where Optimus got cacked.
Voiced by the guy who voiced Duke in the G.I. Joe cartoon.
And did he have kind of Duke vibes?
Yeah,
too?
He was
like,
very much kind of like the Ultimate Soldier.
Ultimate Soldier kind
of
guy.
He's
kind
of like the ultimate badass in a lot of ways. I thought it was a good issue, kind of good action-based issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And also kind of, there's some ties to Transformers that are kind of unexpected. I thought that was really cool in there.
Yep.
I've got new issues of Feral, Ultimate Black Panther, and Black Widow and Hawkeye. What else y'all in your stacks?
You said Ultimate Black Panther?
I did.
Okay. Thought that was good. Wonder Woman, X-Men 97, and Amazing Spider-Man, and Fall of the House of X, which is... Oh, and the final issue of Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty notable.
Also probably worth mentioning that Amazing Spider-Man number 50 has a pretty notable status quo change for Spider-Man.
I almost want to, like, reveal something about the Kong-Godzilla thing, but I guess I probably should.
No. Probably not.
Sort of a big thing that happens with Kong and sort of DC stuff. Let's see. I will mention... Did we mention the latest issue of the House of Brainiac stuff?
Oh, no. I forgot about that.
It's got Lobo and Superman going toe-to-toe on the cover.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Let's see. In DC's facsimile reprint things, the second issue of Crisis on Infinite Earths is out.
Right.
And if you're ready to subject yourself to Ultimate 90s, the facsimile reprint of Deadpool's first appearance in New Mutants 98 is also out this week.
Two issues before it became X-Force.
It's true.
Yep.
Also, if
and
you're
forever.
Paying attention to Image's Ghost Machine imprint,
all right.
There's the second issue of Rook Exodus.
And the first issue reprint.
This has got some pretty... I have to say, it's pretty stellar artwork by Jason Fabok.
Yeah, Fabok is really bringing it.
Yeah, he is. But, yeah.
All right. That is comics for the week. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about various news. All right, so we watched a couple of trailers, and we've got some other news to talk about. Let's start with the first trailer, which is Never Let Go.
I think so.
This is Halle Berry, and her. She's playing a mom to two sons, and they're in this cabin, and they go out, they tie themselves with a rope, and they go out, and it turns out the world ended, and as long as you're attached to this rope back to the house, you're safe, or something like that.
I think, I guess they, like, scavenge or something like that.
It's like a mystical tether or something.
Tone-wise, this reminded me of the sort of apocalyptic, like, novelty hook of Quiet Place.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mixed with a little of The Others. The Nicole Kidman horror film.
Yeah, but it's... there's a question of, like, the trailer sort of raises the question of, like, is she crazy? Is the world still there? And she's been, you know, these kids are, like, trapped in a cabin with her. They definitely right. show, like, monsters and stuff.
Right. But I suppose it could be these...
Her hallucinations. I guess it's,
or what the kids are imagining.
Right.
Or something like that. Yeah. Pretty scary looking trailer.
It's a good trailer. I'm definitely interested. The first I've seen it.
It's notable that the director of this is Alexander Aja.
Yeah,
who did Crawl and
The Hills Have Eyes remake, which I thought was really pretty good.
He always he has a
slightly harder edged horror in general. Like you're going to get some blood
but
in his movies.
It's his like eye and how he kind of does this film shots, like the way it's actually shot. It's very interesting.
Well, by the way, it was kind of interesting in this that. Like it's not like they just tie a rope to the edge of the gates or something at the cabin. They have like it looks like it goes down into the
pulleys
basement, the ropes, and there's pulleys. Like they've built up this thing the same way that they've thought through their how to be quiet in the quiet place, and so you could probably like reel somebody in and stuff like that. But it's a very specific system that they've set up. Whether she's crazy or not, we don't know.
The other trailer we got was Dune Prophecy, which is the Bene Gesserit story on HBO Max.
Yep.
Yeah, like the early years.
10,000 years?
Bene Gesserit
before.
Year one. Yes.
1,000 years or 10,000 years?
10,000 years.
10,000 years before Paul Atreides.
Yep. They're long plan. They're like, we need to make sure people, the right people, sleep together for 10,000 years, and then we can run things.
Yep. This is the birth of the Bene Gesserit. It looks like a...
Frankly, I wouldn't have the patience, by the way. Now, first of all, I probably wouldn't meet their exacting standards either.
Dave, this is why your sisterhood fell apart.
The sisterhood of the traveling pants that I put together?
Yeah. The traveling pants are not going to rule in 10,000 years.
A Cuisance Panserot will be bored to us.
I don't know. I can't remember where we all landed on Doom. Were we all a little bit?
I liked it quite a bit.
Okay.
All right. Nick is the biggest fan, and I liked it, but not quite a bit.
I liked it a little bit less as it went along.
Okay. Of the two movies,
I think on the spectrum, Dave, you're in the center. I'm the hater, and Nick is the lover.
I think that sounds right.
Yeah.
Well. This is an okay
trailer. But previously,
trailer.
I was, I think, the more hater of the first movie.
You might have been, yes. Yeah, I think you were.
But the slopped. Second movie brought you down a little.
I don't know if it can kind of match the sort of larger-than-life cinematic that...
this looks like more Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it does.
So it's clear that, okay, yes, they are... The sisterhood, which is not called the Bene Gesserit yet, I think, does... Sort of, they've established, like, connections to, like, rulers throughout these, probably, like, powerful houses.
The lead does seem to be a Harkonnen.
Right. And I think they said they're, like, truth sayers or truth detectors for them, so they will, you know, be an advisor and no doubt are pulling strings and manipulating things. I can't remember when in Dune the famous robot uprising happens and is put down.
Oh, yeah, I don't know either.
The Butlerian Jihad.
Yep.
But for all I know, that's part of this. But that might have been thousands of years earlier, though. I don't know.
Who knows? It looks cool. It looks like of a piece with Dune.
Visually look like it matched it, even though it was like no big old sandworms roaming about and not like sort of necessarily the big action. Again, it looked more like the Game of Thrones-y court.
I'll be curious to see if this one can make me feel a single thing, which the movies did not.
Yep. They are known for cold and icy characters. Yeah. It's like, what if everyone was Cersei?
Yeah. We got some casting news. Holly Hunter has been cast as sort of the captain or head of the new Star Trek Academy show.
Yep.
This is great news.
This is great news.
Everybody loves Holly Hunter or should love Holly Hunter.
If you don't know Holly Hunter, we're going to hunt you.
Do you have a favorite Holly Hunter performance?
I think I have a weird one. It's a movie I've only seen once. Hang on, I'm looking it up to make sure I'm
right. I like her in Pixar movies.
Which Pixar movie?
She is Mrs. Incredible.
Oh, right. Broadcast News is definitely my
favorite. Never seen
Broadcast
News.
That's a good one.
Seen the trailer?
Is Holly Hunter... That's her in Raising Arizona, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
but
she's
that is
great
not going
that.
To be my pick. My pick is the weird one.
Oh, okay.
Give me a second.
I feel like Steven Spielberg's Always?
Here's the weird thing.
Was she in Crash?
She was in Crash.
The weird body horror Crash movie about Crash people?
I believe she was.
Not the one about racism, the other
one. Right, the other one.
Is
the one about having
pick?
Sex with people in car crashes.
That's
really?
My pick. Yeah.
I didn't know that movie was any good.
I really like it. It's David Cronenberg.
Oh, she's the mom in The Big Sick. That may be my favorite role for her. She's great in that.
She's good in that.
Yeah, Holly Hunter, like, I'll say this. I've never seen her turn in a bad performance.
She's always Yeah.
And I always like her. Arguably have been crushing on her for a long time.
Yep.
Wasn't she in the TV series China Beach, or am I thinking of somebody else?
She might have been, if I go back a ways.
Dana Delaney.
Oh, no, it was Dana Delaney.
Yeah.
You fool.
I am a fool.
Yeah, she started out with she was in Blood Simple.
Yeah. Oh,
her
she was
voice
in that?
Was in Blood Simple.
Okay, I was
going to
say, the femme fatale in that was...
Frances McDormand.
Frances McDormand, yeah.
No, and then she was in Raising Arizona, and she's great in that.
Yep.
Then Broadcast News, I'm looking around to see what Always, which I don't remember. I think I've not seen as much of stuff.
Always is a Steven Spielberg kind of...
She is great in Broadcast News.
She was in the Piano.
Yep.
Then Crash. There's a bunch of stuff.
She was George Clooney's wife in No Brother Art Thou.
Right.
Okay. Oh, yeah. She's like, he's bona fide.
Yep.
She's got twang to her. I hope she still got it in the thing.
Yeah.
I think... We still don't know much about the Starfleet Academy show that's coming up.
Nope.
But I think the idea is that, you know, the head of Starfleet Academy is usually like a retired admiral or maybe in her case, captain. For all we know, there may be like, I don't think she's like, it's going to be on a ship or anything like that. But she's going to be some badass Starfleet captain who runs a school now.
Yep. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more bit of speculative casting. Natasha Lyonne has joined the Fantastic Four.
Yep.
So who do you think she's going to play?
I mean,
Alicia?
I think it's Alicia. But
it's possible. She's a little old for Alicia. I mean, I guess Amy Mouse Baccarat's not young either.
Yeah.
But I have an outside call. She could be Frankie Ray, a.k.a. Nova.
Yeah? You think they might do
multiple
Herald that is not
Silver Surfer quits,
Norrin Rad.
She becomes the Herald.
Yeah, or Shalabal.
I don't think so, but I think it's possible. Yeah, Shalabal quits, yeah. I think that's possible.
Okay.
I also think it's possible she's playing a villain or something like that.
Yep.
Somebody suggests she be a gender-flipped wizard or something like that.
Yeah, I'm just those saying, are all possibilities.
She's only 45.
Yeah.
Evan Moss Macro is 47.
Okay.
It kind of fits.
Don't get me wrong. I do love Natasha
Lyonne. About 20 years younger. Are y'all familiar with Hollywood? I've gotten better about it over the years.
I did. I loved her. I rewatched Poker Face recently, and I loved Natasha Lyonne. If they're casting her as Alicia, she can play a very different Alicia, I think.
Yeah.
Natasha Lyonne, much as I love her, does always play a variation on herself, which is a sort of sardonic, world-weary person. Is not typically Alicia.
I don't know. Is there an FF character that is sardonic?
I do think that getting away from the Alicia as just the eternally optimistic, almost like sort of hippy-dippy.
Agreed.
Sort of like, I just love Ben and life and air and birds.
sculpting.
And sculpting's neat, too.
It's so brutally accurate.
But, you know, they've written her very well in the recent series.
Yeah, I like the character, but that is more than 100% that. Accurate.
Yes. She was
golly,
always meant,
air's neat.
She was always meant to be the person who could look beyond physicality and stuff like that, yeah. And was very... very sort of spiritual in her way, person.
You know,
but
if you want to be able to look
a sardonic Alicia would, I think, be cool.
If you want to be able to look beyond the physical, maybe don't make her blind so that she has to not.
Right, play. Right. It was symbolic, Randy.
Yeah, okay. She's like, now I can see, and oh God, you're a rock monster.
Oh shit! My sense of touch was never really good. I couldn't tell.
I couldn't tell. I'm finger blind. I thought you were smooth.
I think that was one of her questions, like, Ben, I just want to ask something kind of personal. Are you smooth,
or rocky?
Listen, it's a question that you're going to have to ask within the first few dates,
yeah.
I think. You know, you don't want to get too far into a relationship before finding out.
You
smooth or rocky?
Smooth or rocky, yeah.
Peanut butter breath.
Three Body Problem, which I quite enjoyed. Dave enjoyed the two episodes he's watched.
Yep. Yes.
Nick, you've seen all of it?
I saw all of it.
Okay.
Why are we talking about it?
It got renewed.
Oh, good.
Well, it didn't just get renewed.
So, yeah, here's the weird thing. It's renewed through... They're going to finish it, but they haven't said how many seasons or how many episodes.
Okay.
But they basically just told Benioff and Weiss,
yeah,
hey, you guys get to finish your show.
Cool.
Which is cool.
Really good.
Yeah.
Except the last time we did that, they... shit the bed.
But here's the thing. They had to make up the last
season. They have a book that told them.
They have the entire story.
Yeah.
And I think season one, I believe, broadly covered the first book.
I think there's a little bit of the second in there as well. Okay.
But there's three books, so like two to three seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be great. You know, the Chinese version on Hulu is 30 episodes, the first book.
Yeah, it's crazy long. They are like, it's the ultimate definition of milking it. But three seasons isn't long enough to necessarily get just utterly bored of and leave something as in shambles like they did Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. I really like that first season.
Yeah, I did too.
And I'm glad we're getting the finale. That's good to know. One of y'all posted this. Simon Kinberg is in talks to produce a Star Trek movie. Isn't Simon Kinberg not very good?
Well, he's the guy who did the X-Men stuff.
Right.
X-Men stuff? I might have posted it, but I actually don't remember.
No, I posted it. I saw it got posted today. Kinberg is... what is...
I thought he was kind of a... middling producer kind of thing. He is...
I mean, he did Dark Phoenix and X-Men Apocalypse.
He did the bad X-Men, too.
But he did First Class, or he, like, produced First Class and Days of Future Past and Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Deadpool.
This is kind of like the Kathleen Kennedy stuff. She's had some misses, she's had some hits.
Okay. Yeah.
So they brought him on to sort of reboot the... Okay, so here's... He also... Oh, Dark Phoenix was his directorial debut.
Yes, I remember that being a thing. Oof.
Yeah. He's also working.
I actually like Dark Phoenix, but it was kind of a weirdly small movie.
His production credits go from Murder on the Orient Express to The Martian.
Okay.
And he was co-screenwriter and executive producer of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. You want to talk about mixed bag here?
Boy, yeah, because right in the like I want to say that's on the lower end. What were the other two you mentioned?
Murder on the Orient Express
is
Martian.
Is a notch above that, and Martian is like
Martian's
I think
very
great.
Good. Yes.
So. We don't have any idea what's going to happen.
So he's stepping into a project that's actually been in development. Toby Haynes, who directed part of Andor, is on board to direct. Seth Graham Smith, who worked with him, that's probably how he got in.
Yeah,
worked with him on Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, and he is writing the script for the new movie.
This is
decades
the one...
before the events of the 2009 movie, likely around modern times, involved the creation of Starfleet and humankind's first contact with alien life. I don't like that. I don't want to see that.
So here's the thing, is like, a lot of those things have been covered. So just as a random example, Star Trek, was it not Generations? First Contact.
Yep.
That showed our first contact with an alien civilization.
Famously.
It was the Vulcans.
Yes.
It's a great scene. They did a good job with it. They came through.
We don't need more of that.
Then in Enterprise, they did all the prequel stuff where it's like, oh, this is their kind of first steps out into the thing. It ended with the Federation forming, like, in the last season or two, so we saw that happen.
There's no need to do this.
I'm like, what people want are, like, the cool bridge crews, whether they're familiar or maybe not, but I'm like, I don't know what they're going to show we haven't sort of already seen before.
This definitely does not sound good to me. This all sounds bad. Here's what I would do.
Yeah?
Reboot Next Generation for movies.
I'm surprised that they haven't gotten to that place. I think they must be waiting to see if they can get any more out of the Chris Pine era people.
Yeah.
They've been trying that for years. It's been like 9 years or something now, so it doesn't look likely to me.
But like, I wouldn't watch...
There would absolutely be an interest in a rethought Picard and Riker and all that stuff.
Because I think that could work. You could recast it. All those guys are, you know, they've had their swan song.
And also, by the way, since the early episodes of Star Trek Next Generation were... The first season or even a little bit more were kind of sucky.
Yeah.
Kind of have now that they know who the characters are, you know, they after all that time, they surely know. Yeah, you could kind of have them hit the ground running.
Yeah. Also, to be honest, Star Trek shouldn't be in the movies. Star Trek is best on TV. It just is.
There are some really good movies in there.
Wrath of Khan is great.
Star Trek 3 is great. I like First Contact.
I was gonna say, I like First Contact.
And I like a lot of the others. They're not as high tier, but...
There's stuff I like, but it always has to be a little more action-oriented than...
It is what they do, and it means that they get a little bit away from what they are.
Yeah. What it does best is not usually represented well in film.
Right.
There are certainly good ones to be done.
Right.
But yeah, that's one of the things that, like, I'm lucky... This is nothing I want. I don't want any of this.
And that's the thing is, like, if, you know, like, I don't necessarily want, you know, I guess if they're going to do blockbusters, the one thing that would happen if they did Next Generation is they'd probably be like the 2009 ones, a little more action-oriented and all that stuff. Hopefully some thoughtfulness to it.
Yeah.
And Picard isn't just fighting everybody. the nice thing is those are kind of spectacle things that get people into it.
Yeah.
And, like, the 2009 movie actually did a great job of getting people interested in the universe and, like, just the bare bones of it.
It's just their story didn't make any sense.
Story didn't make any sense.
it was mostly Hollywood nonsense.
So, in a weird way, I almost would prefer something like that that's disposable.
Yeah.
Rather than something that might affect the show and things like
that.
Well,
this might be disposable. It sounds pretty disposable.
Yeah. I have some concerns about that.
On the other side of things, this is not interesting to me, but Dave, I know you are. Ari Aster is producing a Hansel and Gretel stop motion movie.
Right, that's Ari Aster of Midsommar and Hereditary.
Yep. Yep.
But like, what was the last movie or two he did? Because like, he kind of lost me a little bit. Did he also do the Viking thing, or was that the other guy?
No, that's the other guy.
That's Eggers, yeah.
Robert Eggers.
Yep.
So did he go from Midsommar to Beau Is Afraid?
Yeah, which I still haven't watched.
Like, everybody seemed to have mixed thoughts on it. Even the people who liked it. I think I know a handful of people who are like, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
But there's usually, it's brilliant if you can endure it.
Because it's like 3 hours long.
Yeah.
It's Joaquin Phoenix, who's not my favorite actor.
I do like him a lot, actually.
Watch Napoleon and report back.
Did you watch the whole thing, Nick?
I watched 30 minutes of it, and I was like, I can't take this shit.
You like Signs, right?
I liked him in Signs as a supporting player.
Supporting character, yeah. You're like, you're not allowed to be...
Gladiator, lead. I like him as a villain.
Yeah.
As a
main character, he becomes either the Joker, or Beau Is Afraid,
yeah.
Or Napoleon, and it all stinks.
Or Her. Didn't he do Her?
Yes, I never saw that.
One where he was like talking to an AI...
The only reason that was on my mind lately is because I just read that Scarlett Johansson was suing somebody who was like, it does AI chatbot stuff. Because
they wanted
her and she said no. And then they got somebody who's like a real close soundalike, like a more or less a clone.
Yeah.
And like, it's creepy stuff. Anyway, what are we talking about?
Ari Aster, Hansel and Gretel.
Okay, so this guy, at the very
least...
But
he's producing it, though.
We know... Oh, he's just producing. Okay.
Yeah.
He's not doing it.
He's got a certain brand of horror that he... You know, he's sometimes considered one of those elevated horror guys, the A24 guys. I bet this Hansel and Gretel stop-motion thing or whatever is going to be scary AF.
Just going to say, if a child doesn't get decapitated, I'm going to be a little disappointed.
Well, you know, let the Babadook guide you. that's just one of those things I'll keep an eye on. You know, gotta see trailers and stuff. We'll see who's... I don't know. Did they say who the director is yet?
I don't think so,
okay.
No.
We'll see what happens.
The last two things, these are also things that are in development. There's not much to say, except there are people that we like doing them. Andy Samberg with The Lonely Island Production Company are doing something for Amazon called The Robots Go Crazy.
Well, it's also from the Radio Silence guys, who are the Scream and the Ready or Not people, which I thought was fairly...
Yeah.
I think it's a notable thing.
And Samberg is attached to star. It is an action comedy. Don't know much, but that's a good list of people.
Yeah, I'll definitely be looking out for it, because that sounds fun.
People mainly know him from the Lonely Island albums and the SNL sketches, but also the cop show.
Oh, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
was the... during the pandemic, what was the time travel-ish movie that he did?
With Christine Milioti.
Yeah, that one.
Oh man,
that one was really, really good.
Yeah,
he was just a good character in that.
It
but that was.
Was
a great movie.
That was a great movie. Yeah,
Palm Springs.
Yeah,
Palm Springs.
Yeah.
Watch
definitely
that movie.
Worth a watch. Yeah. Lastly, we have The Smashing Machine, which is not a nickname for Dwayne Johnson, though you'd be forgiven for thinking so.
Yes.
It actually is a nickname for a extreme fighter, Mark Kerr.
A real person of MMA.
Yep. And apparently Emily Blunt had watched the documentary about him and talked to Dwayne Johnson. It's like, you got to make this movie. And so he's going to do it with not Josh Safdie, but Benny Safdie, who are not... The Safdie brothers are now like making separate movies.
Yeah, it's a little like the Coen brothers.
And... unfortunately, like the Coen brothers, I think only one of them is good. So I don't know if this is the good one or the bad one. But
I thought they only showed one image from it. And it showed...
One is just like a lunkhead.
Yes. You remember, there's a bit that was like a Family Guy or Clerks, where it was like Matt Damon and Ben Affleck talking about doing Good Will Hunting.
One was like super derpy.
And one of them is like high and on the couch. He's like, hey, put my name on that too. And I think it might have been Ben Affleck, and they said Matt Damon was the talent. And I'm like, it feels like all of these. There's like there's one brother who's the talent. There's one brother who's high on the couch and who's like, hey, put my name on that too.
I will refute that a little bit. Ben Affleck actually is a pretty good director.
He's done some good stuff.
He is, but also it's a funny bit.
It is. It's a great bit.
Yeah.
I think what impressed me is that they showed one image from it. It doesn't look anything like The Rock. I mean, the character he's like has prosthetics.
You're right. It doesn't look anything like The Rock.
Like his transform, I think The Rock saying kind of challenging himself a little bit, and with a kind of a more dramatic role is
he needs to, because his wrestler action persona thing is getting
dumb.
Old.
It's getting old. I've kind of lost a lot
him playing himself in every role, and if he wants to be president, which God does he want to be president, he's gonna have to be dramatic.
Well, I think
actor.
He's seeing what John Cena and why can I not think of
Groot.
Drax.
Dave Bautista. See, we need to start there.
And both of those people are really challenging themselves with interesting roles, even though they kind of are getting still typecast.
Yeah, right, for sure. Right.
But I've seen Bautista
is like
ranks.
Dramatic.
Yep. Yeah, Bautista and what's the Shyamalan thing we liked?
Knock at the Cabin.
Playing a professor.
He was playing
like an elementary school teacher.
Yes,
it was an interesting role for him.
Scary veiled menace.
He was not a wrestler.
Yeah, and John Cena
wasn't a space wrestler.
He was not a space wrestler.
An Earth wrestler
or a robot wrestler.
A robot wrestler.
And yes, John Cena plays Peacemaker, which is
over the top.
But he opens himself up to being vulnerable.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. There are some actually elements in that are surprising, too.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful, especially with a Safdie involved, that might get us an interesting movie.
Yeah.
I guess Emily Blunt is also going to be in there. I'd forgotten that they were actually really good friends.
Well, that's right. They were in Jungle Cruise
together.
Which I didn't like.
I was fine with it. It wasn't amazing.
All I care about is that The Rock decide he'd rather be an actor than be president. That's all I want. I don't want him running for president. I don't want him running for president in 2028 or 2032 or whenever it's going to be. I don't want to live to see a Rock presidency. That's all I want. So if this movie will stop that, good. Make this movie with the worst Safdie.
You don't want a center.
I don't know he's the worst Safdie.
I don't know which Safdie has the best.
It's a 50-50 flip.
Nobody can remember. So when they get hired, they're just like, here goes nothing.
Who is the? What was the other thing that the solo Safdie brother did direct something already? Didn't he?
No, I don't think so. Because they did Good Time and
I thought there was something
he did and it wasn't.
Well,
great.
he was in. Obi-Wan Kenobi. He acted in Obi-Wan. Right.
And Benny Safdie was in Oppenheimer.
He was an Oppenheimer.
Yep.
He was really good in it.
Yep. I'm not looking up Josh Safdie to see, because I thought they had announced something at least.
Is there a secret third really dumb brother?
Is there another Summers brother?
Yes,
another Safdie brother?
Adam Extreme Safdie is actually...
Kid Vulcan Safdie.
Kid Vulcan Safdie. he did that show The Curse.
Oh, right.
So maybe Benny is the good Safdie, because The Curse, I heard, was not great.
Oh, really? No, I mean, I watched two episodes, and I thought it was interesting. I need to get back to it.
I also don't like Nathan Fielding at all.
Yeah, I think that is kind of...
What was The Curse about?
It's like a weird kind of reality... It's about a husband and wife who are like...
It was a spoof of those, like, home flipping shows.
Yeah, okay. But then there was kind of a horror element to it. It was very...
conceptually sounds
good. It was very uncomfortable.
It was Emma Stone alongside this comedian, Nathan Fielder, who does this weird, very uncomfortable comedy. And I feel like casting yourself as the husband of Emma Stone is creepy.
Sure.
She was definitely in for it. I mean, she, like, produced it and everything, too. Sure.
Emma Stone, go to whatever Weird Man made, whatever that movie was called.
The Frankenstein movie.
Poor Things.
Yeah, Poor
Things.
She's
in two more of his movies. Go to him.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
She's making like two more movies with him.
I mean...
She should stay with him and stay away from Nathan Fielder and the worst Safdie brother.
I'm amused that there's a worse Safdie brother.
I mean, I've actually never seen a minute of The Curse, so I'm just hating for no reason.
Yeah. It didn't reel me in, but I recognized that there was talent there.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about some TV and some movies. Okay, so last week of doing this, Spoiler warning for X-Men 97. Big spoiler warning, because we're going to talk about the finale.
Yep.
The finale and projections into the future for what could happen next yes. season and all also that stuff.
For the characters, because they do go in the future and yes, in the they past. Do.
Yes.
So, as finales go, I quite like this. I have my gripes, but I thought it was a very, very good finale. Yeah, and then the sort of aftermath of it, I loved.
Yep.
I had... aftermath as in what they're setting up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. Like, the last three episodes all had, like, just so much going on in them. I admit, I was kind of missing some of the downtime stuff of the early episodes. Sure. And then, you know, I know they've got a barrel towards this big finale, and they did a great job with it.
What's weird is...
But I did kind of miss those.
What's weird is it was a three-parter, and I felt like it could have been a six-parter. Because, like, when they did Dark Phoenix and the Phoenix Saga, those were all five-part episodes originally. Yeah. Now, again, there was a 22-episode season instead of 10. But I was like, man... There's, like Dave said, there's room for more downside. There's definitely room to expand the story a little bit.
You know, one of the things that made it feel like the Dark Phoenix saga and stuff, not just the level of threat, which was very high.
Right.
But also, there was this extreme emotions. Gambit is dead.
Yep.
You know, Rogue and Magneto, Xavier and Magneto, really intense emotions and conflicts between them. But also, they did, like, a sort of a visual sort of thing that reflected the death of Phoenix, where because the mansion got partially destroyed, they all had to wear their old costumes.
That was so good.
Which was, that was, like, what they did when they fought, like, the Shi'ar to save Jean in Death of Phoenix. And so it evoked that in a very interesting and cool way without having to, like, be that story.
Yeah, it did. Seeing those costumes was a big part of what I liked about the finale.
Yeah.
I thought they did a great job with them, too.
Mm-hmm. It actually started in the penultimate episode.
Right. And they went to the finale, which was basically opened with a bird song. And
from the 1960s.
And then a Magneto and Xavier conversation.
Which turns out not to be a flashback, but looks like a flashback.
Looks like a flashback, but it is in Magneto's head. And
it did, like, a deep dive on writing of Xavier trying to get through to him.
Yeah. Well, it was sort of how they both first... told each other that they were mutants.
Which
was a really cool... There were a couple of scenes in this that
anybody who wants to, you can find homoerotic undertones.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, they were all over there.
Including the scene later on where they got closer and closer and they're like, "Kiss now."
But if they kiss, they become Onslaught. That's the rule.
That's true.
I swear I thought they were going to become Onslaught. There was all this talk about, you know, our minds could become trapped together, Magnus.
Yeah.
And I was Onslaught.
I'm glad they swerved.
I am too, but they definitely seemed like they were teasing it.
Yeah, I think that, that's what they were kind of wanting.
They swerved into, like, an area that's, like, kind of an unknown, more 90s-ish stuff to me. But it's interesting, like, more, I think, than Onslaught would be. I don't want, like, just another super big bad.
Yeah.
I like the kind of mystery of what they are setting up for season 2.
Also led to the, "I am Magneto."
Yeah. What did he do?
When he remembered who he was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He went super and, like, pulled the asteroid up from destroying Earth. Because, you know, that's Magneto.
So,
Go ahead.
I think my biggest problem with it was that the fight wasn't great. The fight against Bastion, I thought, was not as innovative as all. And they've done so many great action sequences.
And Bastion was not, as so much feared, a great villain.
Yeah.
He was involved in, like, really good... There were good scenes that happened around him.
Yeah, for sure.
There was well-written stuff happening constantly. It's just he himself is still a 90s character.
Yeah.
And they did some work with him, but it wasn't,
it was
amazing.
Solid work. The idea that
I would agree with solid.
The mother, like, basically shoving Xavier away, like, he was supposed to be one of the first X-Men.
Right, he could have been.
I thought that was a cool idea. Been twisted by the Master Mold's programming. Those were all more interesting ideas than I feel like we ever got with Bastion.
Yeah.
And the fight scene, he's powerful. I thought the Rogue fight scene in particular in this episode
Let's see. But just real quick, as far as, like, the plot lines going on, ultimately we have Asteroid M coming down and it's going to crash and hit the Earth with, like, I don't know, like, extinction level.
It was going to dinosaur the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
What else was going on? They had to stop Bastion. There's an emotional thing with Cyclops and Cable.
Yep.
And stuff like that.
And Jean.
And Jean. And then there's Xavier and Magneto. Is that all the big plot stuff?
I think so.
Yeah, because they sort of sidelined Wolverine and Morph. I mean, they didn't have a ton to do.
Yeah, Morph just admitted his love to Wolverine again while dressed up as Jean Grey.
Yep.
Storm was not super in this episode.
I'm surprised that Storm... Because Storm's arc... kind of felt cut short. Like, they did life death, they gave her powers back, And then we really, she didn't get a lot to do in the last
couple. It felt like she was
going to
come on like gangbusters.
Yeah, I thought she was going to show up as a big
She got the sister scene with Jean.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was great.
That was great.
Actually.
And then she was definitely a powerhouse, but she didn't, there was no completion to her arc in a lot of ways.
No, she didn't electrocute Bastion or anything.
The sister scene
that
you're,
got that moment.
Yeah.
That you're talking about, just like a week or two earlier, a friend of ours had said that he's like, oh, I'm rereading old Claremont X-Men, and I really like how, like, Jean and Aurora would call each other sisters and had this really close connection. And they totally got that in this. There's when they...
Do you think this started out by, like, Jean kept calling her sister, and Aurora's like, I'm just going to go with it. This person, like, girl keeps calling me sister.
You got a thang going on. It's like, get out.
Oh, no.
No, but...
He's doing the Wakanda Forever salute at me. It's
so a lot of the X-Men, basically, they get big attacks on Bastion, who's kind of like a Terminator in this. He's taking all the hits, holding it together, but he's like Rogue just unleashes on him and got some of the best visual sequences.
Yeah, yeah.
She's super beat down, did a big old Hulk-style clap that, like, melted his fucking face off.
Yeah.
No, that was Jubilee.
That was Jubilee.
Was it?
Jubilee got to...
I guess it, like, she rankled up his, like, robot body, and, like, with that clap.
Yeah, she definitely smashed.
And I think got a partial face smacky down.
I will say, I think we were all surprised that Jubilee didn't have her, like, new powers manifest, like they showed in the future.
It seemed like they set up a thing they didn't pay off. To have set it up and then, not have her at least kind of like... It said it looked like classic Jubilee.
Yeah.
I think she's got a little more work to do.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen her, like, in the moment, really focus, kind of do some of the things that her elder incarnation had been doing.
I mean,
she does get to do, like, some big... Like, her powers are amped in this.
Yeah.
She definitely just, like... goes to town on Bastion, which I thought was a really cool moment. Her glasses get shattered.
Yep.
It felt like an elevation of that character.
I also really liked the scene where I think Cyclops, his arc kind of came full circle in this, in the sense that they had gone ahead and shown that he was fallible, that he had made some bad choices, but, like, ultimately was a guy who wanted to try and stick with his loved ones. And that kind of specifically comes through when he and Jean say their farewell because they think they're going to die to Cable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Really, really lovely scene.
It was a great scene.
And then when they go back to here's what's going on the ship, Cyclops goes into overload mode.
Yeah.
Well, he takes off his visor and goes like nuclear.
Yep.
Yep. That's pretty cool.
I felt like everybody kind of got to do cool stuff, and they definitely did. Everybody's got to use their powers to stop Asteroid M.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Because, like, humans, like, they're like, oh, we have a plan for this. We'll nuke Asteroid M if we have to. And we're like, oh, the nukes didn't work.
The Magneto protocols.
Yep. Magneto protocols,
which is a reference to the comics.
Yep. Which was a dumb protocol because, I mean, really, you're going to fire
nuclear weapons.
Yeah. It seems
they might have had plastic.
They could have.
Sure.
But anyway, they do manage to push the asteroid out into space, where a strange phenomenon occurs.
Now, before you get to that, we didn't even talk about the cool guest stars.
There were a lot of guest stars.
Spidey,
90s Iron Man.
This is all, people who are, like, either hearing about, like, Asteroid M coming down or viewing
or dealing,
it from the city.
Dealing with a power outage.
It was Peter, MJ, and Flash.
Freaking Cloak and Dagger.
Cloak and Dagger. And Daredevil.
And Daredevil.
And more Silver Samurai.
So the Peter and MJ thing is, I guess, really important because I guess in the Spider-Man cartoon, it ended with him not knowing where Mary Jane was.
Right.
So this was like a revelation of, oh no, they did. He found her. They got together.
Yeah.
And that was a nice payoff for that. The Spider-Man cartoon people were never going to get. So that was a nice nod to the Spider-Man people.
Spider-Man people are jonesing for Spider-Man 93 or whatever.
We'll see because this did gangbusters for Disney. We'll see if we get a continuation of Spider-Man.
Maybe.
I'd be up for it.
I think I'd like to go a few years on this before they start bringing another stuff and potentially
delete
the license.
Alpha Flight 98.
I mean,
they Alpha Flight was in this episode.
Yes, they were.
Like Psylocke and
Omega Red.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what Psylocke was.
No, Omega Red was on the Dark Stars.
Oh,
she was in the Russian.
That makes
with
more
the,
sense. That makes more
with
sense.
With Crimson Dynamo and.
Okay. But also, like, the very specifically, the Iron Man was like 90s Iron Man.
Yep.
I wanted... Cap was in the room with the president, and I wanted them to give me redemption for Cap, and he didn't. He just stood there looking sad that the president fired
him. Yeah, Cap didn't say you've made a big mistake, president.
I'm like, damn it,
well,
Cap.
Well, didn't he say, like, we shouldn't do this? Or did T'Chaka do that?
He didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Cap should have thrown his shield at the president's head.
instead, he was more like, He's like, I don't agree with what you're doing, Mr. President, but I guess you're the big boss, and I have to do everything you say.
That's absolutely what it was.
And would you like your boots shined?
He probably didn't do the shield on him because he couldn't find it. So he's chilling in those mountains somewhere.
You just see him in the background just throwing air, and he's like, right. I don't know shield.
I don't, could not find it. Searched for days Timbuktu. In those mountains.
And then,
the ending, the asteroid is just vanishes.
Yep.
Right. Does the whole asteroid disappear?
Yep. Whole asteroid disappears.
And we see sort of two teams of X-Men. One flung into the future, one flung into the past.
Yep.
Past team is in ancient Egypt.
3000 BC.
Yep.
And
where they rescue a young man named En-Saba Nur from people who are attacking him. Now, this may be a reference to some of the stuff that happened in the comics where Rama Tut was trying to destroy Apocalypse before he became too powerful.
It's true.
So if they do Rama Tut versus Apocalypse in ancient Egypt with the X-Men on his side, that'll be interesting.
Yep. I mean, Rama Tut could do time travel, so...
The future is Apocalypse. He's sort of won.
Yep.
And there's the Ascani clan that is headed by Mother Ascani, who in the comics, Rachel Summers. Yeah. And
what is the Ascani clan?
They're like a faction that are rivaling Apocalypse.
Yeah, they're trying to stop Apocalypse.
They're like the rebels.
Yeah, the rebels.
Most of what I saw, just like looking at this, not knowing that comic at all, looked like a wasteland.
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of like...
So it's like Mad Max Apocalypse?
It's like Mad Max Apocalypse,
But it's like supposed to be like in the year 3000 or something, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's like...
Yeah. It's 3000 BC and 3000 AD.
Right.
And basically it's Cyclops and Jean Grey story that they did that had them raising people
Cyclops and Jean Grey are there.
And it'll be a future where Apocalypse is running the show.
Yep.
And so we've got... basically the bookend stories are... Little teen Apocalypse or 20-something Apocalypse coming into his own powers in ancient Egypt and in the future where he's won.
Yep. And then like sort of teen Cable, who they're going to get to raise.
Right.
And who knows where Storm, Wolverine, and Morphar could be. Know.
Right.
Do we know where Professor X and Magneto are?
They're in the past.
They're in the past. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Because they'd like to joke that Magneto and Rogue are going to go behind a pyramid.
Yes. I'd say it's like, with Gambit out of the picture, I guess they can just do whatever they want without any concerns.
But there's a stinger.
Because there is a stinger that shows in the present times.
Yep.
On Genosha, Apocalypse walking among the ruins.
And he picks up a burned card and he's like, so much death. Which, for the comics people know, Gambit was one of his horsemen. He did turn him into death at one point.
Yep.
So he's probably going to resurrect. So that's how Gambit will come back.
I mean, I feel like Gambit has been a horseman. Wolverine has been.
Archangel, of course.
Yeah.
You know what's pretty impressive is, I am kind of glad that they're probably going to bring him back, ultimately. Yep. But it's impressive is that in an era when we are so used to that happening, we didn't guess it, actually. Like, we were like, I guess he's just dead on the show.
Yeah. The other thing was we saw the modern Forge is like he's got a X-Men Days of Future Past style
a listing of what everybody's status is, whether they're missing or dead or what.
It looks like he's putting together a new X-Men team, and Bishop shows up, and there was such a great bit. He's like, X-Men have been dead before.
Yeah, it's good.
But the team he showed like included Magic, Emma Frost, Kitty Pryde, Havoc,
Colossus,
all people that I want to see.
Yeah, I think that's a good team.
Add in Longshot and Dazzler, and we get that Outback X-Men.
What I would like, one of, I think, the best things about Havoc in the comics is literally just how they visualize his power, usually.
Yeah.
Those kind of weird concentric circles and how Neil Adams invented that in the 70s.
That would be very cool to see.
If they can come up with a cool visual to look at that, which I know he did show up in the 90s cartoon.
Yeah.
I imagine they probably did not get it quite right.
I don't think so.
And so, I want to see him get it right.
Well, the thing is, we also, in the 90s cartoon, Forge was part of X-Factor.
Yep.
And so... He and Havoc have worked together before.
Yeah.
So, I would actually love if it's like Havoc and Psylocke and basically the Outback X-Men with Forge in the leadership position.
That'd be cool.
That'd be very cool.
Well, maybe if Alpha Flight lets him borrow her. She's not Canadian, is she?
No.
What's she even doing in there?
She's British.
British.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or Japanese, depending on which one you're going
with. I guess if you visit Canada long enough, you can go ahead and join Alpha Flight.
Sure. No, England ruled Canada for a long time.
That's true. They're like ballpark.
You're a colony.
I was going to talk about a couple things I've been watching recently. I got the Batman Beyond Blu-rays for my birthday. I have never watched all of Batman Beyond, I don't think. In fact, I think I've seen a lot of the first season multiple times, mm-hmm. but I don't know if I've seen much of the later seasons. And so I went through and watched all of season one and had forgotten just how good that show is from the jump.
Right.
Like, they had it right at the very beginning. All of it is there.
I guess all the knowledge that they'd put into Batman the Animated Series yep. and Superman at that yep. point, they were able to kind of bring together in this.
Well, there's a featurette on this with Alan Burnett, Paul Dini, Bruce Timm, and Glenn Murakami, who are sort of the lead people.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking about this was a development executive at Fox Kids called them in and was basically like, hey, we love what you guys are doing with Batman, but we want to aim for a sort of younger demographic. Can you give us like a teenage Batman? And they were apparently like, they were talking about it over the weekend, and Dini and Tim were like, I'm going to quit. They want it out. They're like, we're not going to do this. This sounds dumb. And then they came up with this Batman Beyond idea, and like, they came back and sort of pitched it in the room. And the guy was like, okay, go. And they're like, well, we'll go think about it. He's like, no, you have the green light. Go make the show. So like, this was the thing they really wanted. And so they were like, well, this would be fun because we can show the future of Batman. We can actually follow up on all the themes. Like, what happens to Bruce Wayne 50 years in the future and all that kind of stuff. And it really works on that level. Like, it is,
yep.
their Bruce Wayne, their older Bruce Wayne is such a great character.
Yeah.
And Terry McGinnis is a really good Batman.
Yes.
They were incorporating...
But he's a Batman who's a little bit more Spider-Man-ish.
They were incorporating a little bit of Spider-Man. In fact, a lot of his villains feel like they are Spider-Man riffs. Like, Spellbinder is very much Mysterio. I forget who all else, but...
Out of curiosity, do we know if they've ever, like, overtly talked about that? Like, said, yes, this was the case?
I don't know if they have.
Or just that it vibes like it.
Well, at some point, there's a government-sponsored team called the Fantastic Three that is, like, a big Molten Man and a guy who can turn 2D and stretch.
So we're thinking this big Molten Man is probably based on Moltar from Krishtar?
That's what I was thinking, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a Marvel property.
It's a Marvel property, like, yeah.
That's, you want to go big.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. At any rate.
Yes.
Batman Beyond, it's a 13-episode season.
Yep.
Really good. I forget how good the writing is. Like, they definitely were doing the, like, Batman had sort of screwed up all his various kids.
Yep.
Like, an older Barbara Gordon was Commissioner Gordon.
Right.
And they had been in a relationship, which I hate. This is a Bruce Timm thing.
Yeah.
But... that's a minor flaw in what is otherwise a really good... They talked about, like, they didn't want to go too far in the future, so all the cell phones were, like, huge. Because it's like, 90s.
They just didn't know.
And, yeah, they didn't know. But it's a solid future. It's a recognizable future. The Jokers are a gang now.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool idea.
That was a really good idea.
Let me put this to you. Any clunkers in the first
season? No. The first 13 episodes, everyone a banger. Every episode's great.
Nice.
Does that introduce, like, Ink and...
Ink is in episode 2.
Okay.
Actually, the first part is a 3-part episode, so technically episode 4. But Ink is a great bad guy, corporate servitor. And then they bring her back later on. She's in, like, a cryogenic prison, and a lovesick, like, janitor, basically, or worker, frees her and wants to be like her, and she's using him the whole time.
Yeah. And then there's, the DDs?
The DDs don't show up till later.
Oh, really?
In the first season, there is a Spellbinder.
Spellbinder.
Who turns out to be the psychiatrist who's, like, trying to rob people by using his illusions.
Just the one that uses
there's
sound.
Shriek.
Shriek.
Really, really good. They did some great sound. There's a bit where he turns all the sound off, and so there's this, like, a silent fight.
Yeah,
which
I
is very,
that.
Very well done. And there's a bit where... Bruce is in the car with Ace the Bat Hound, which, by the way, giving him the dog was great, but he's like trying to rescue he's trying to help Terry who's battling Shriek in the silence, and he's like you can hear something, can't you, boy? And so he lets Ace out, and Ace saves Terry from being hit by a truck because he's got dog hearing and he can hear better.
That's cool.
So there's cool little bits like that, great little dialogue. Terry's a very likable character. His mom is like, he's working for Bruce Wayne, and that's his cover. And so his mom keeps, like, you know, wanting to know why he's all out of all hours, this kind of thing.
Right.
They're doing some interesting sort of Peter Parker-ish type stuff.
Yep, a little bit like Peter and Tony Stark, or...
Yeah.
I can't remember, do they have him, like, dating anyone? Is he,
yeah,
like,
he's
a
got a girlfriend, Dana, who he keeps not showing up for. It's very much a Spider-Man kind of thing.
Okay, yeah.
They also do, they did bring a couple of bad guys back. They do a Mr. Freeze arc that's really good.
Yep, I remember that.
Mr. Freeze episode, I guess I should say. And I feel like there was somebody else they used, another villain who they used in the first season.
Is it Robo Scarecrow?
Definitely not Robo Scarecrow.
Robo Poison Ivy?
Nope. Actually, they talk about they didn't do any of the like Poison Ivy Beyond. Did you mention that
they wanted to kind of stake out new territory, do new villains, which I think is a good idea.
Unless they do it in the second, third, or fourth season, which they might. I don't think they use Ra's al Ghul, who would be the obvious one to do a
I don't remember.
Still alive, yeah.
And then they introduced the new villain, the basically the not blight. Is it Blight?
Blight, yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's the big bad. His arc continues throughout. He's trying to find a cure for his radiation poisoning that he gets in the first episode. And that comes to a head of the final episode, which I'm not sure I've ever seen before.
Right.
Where he like is basically publicly revealed and becomes just Blight, not the corporate raider guy that he was.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah,
like his father worked for that company?
His father worked for that company and found some... They were going to sell germ weapons to this evil company, this evil country. And his father had the evidence and they had him killed by a character voiced by George Takei.
That's nice.
Yeah. Really, really great. Spectacular action. Really good music. Really good production design. Like... I am really enjoying going back and watching this again.
That's pretty cool. Like you, I have not really revisited it since the 90s, other than maybe just some stray episodes here and there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if I were to do the same, it would also have that kind of newness to
me. Yeah, it holds up beautifully. It's really, really good.
Also, just always has to be said, the coolest opening ever.
Yeah, it's a great opening sequence. All right, that will wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.